providing Coleman with a unique blend of music from the People's Bank of Alabama studio. You're listening to Live 95, Coleman's independent radio. WRJMLP, Coleman. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. And now, it's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
They're going to correct his name, Melvin.
That's all right.
Welcome to Understanding the Law. It's part with of the Melvin show. Hastings.
It's part of the show, Daryl Netherly.
It sure is. Every week I want it fixed so bad. It is incorrect, and I do not do well with incorrect information. So how was your week, Melvin?
It was fine. I've been busy.
Mm-hmm. And what have you been tackling?
I don't know if anything interesting. I mean, I went to criminal court this morning in Jefferson County. I can't remember what I did yesterday. I get lost because I got so much going on. It's hard. You get tugged here and there. And going back to court, Thursday I got court in Morgan County and got court in Birmingham too. And got to figure out how I'm going to get all that worked in. But it'll work its way out, I hope.
Well, you have an intern this summer, Landon.
Yeah, I have Mr. Landon here helping me out. He's getting to learn. He graduated back in May, so he's getting to learn a lot of real life stuff, getting all these good stories in a law office.
Uh-huh. Top of his class, I heard.
He was the top of his class, got valedictorian.
Uh-huh. Congratulations.
His mom's proud of him, and I'm proud of him, and did a good job.
So you're going to work him to death this summer and then send him to college?
Yes, he's working to death because he's working with me, and then he's working his other part-time jobs, and they about killed him this week when they had the... Yeah, rock the South.
Yes.
All these places stayed open late, so he had to work late. That's good for him.
And I believe you're tackling Spanish.
Yeah. Yeah, and you had to learn Spanish. Mm-hmm. Online.
So we have an announcement to make, and I'll let Melvin announce it. We have a gentleman coming in on the Big D radio show July the 6th, which is a Republican candidate for
the governor, ain't that's what you mm-hmm. told me today at the beast Stacy George. I guess I don't know how you got in touch with him, but
he actually contacted Daryl, his wife did, and she called me and I booked her in the show, so booked him in the show, and you're gonna come and co-host that
I'm
night.
Yeah, I'm gonna come. I like Stacy. I've known him for a pretty good while. He's probably got an ARAB address, but I think he's up in Morgan County. Mm-hmm. Before you get to Lacey Springs area. I can't remember exactly where it is, but he's a character. Yeah, he was the one that ran for governor last time against Bentley when nobody else was running, so he challenged him in the primary, and then I think he's going to make a go at it again. So,
and then we have invited a few local attorneys to come in and co-host with you in the next few weeks, and I'm excited.
Yes, I don't know. They ain't on that.
Well, we'll get them in here.
What'll happen on that?
That's exactly
what'll
right.
be said.
And Daryl will be hosting, so
he'll make it interesting.
It will be interesting.
Yeah.
So tonight, you can call in with any question. It's 256-737-9505. And tonight we're going to discuss wills.
Yep. I think that was a topic we've hit a few times, just some of the basic stuff. But I think me and you had talked, and we need to really get down deep into it and kind of discuss a lot of the technical stuff about wills.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a surprise caller. Big D's on the phone.
How much knew we was talking
What's
about?
What's going on?
Did you know we was talking about you, Daryl?
No, I had no idea.
No idea. You knew you wasn't a topic, huh?
Well, you know, look, I've almost been replaced by Danielle, so You know, I'm just laying low coming to work every night. Now, I'm actually working second shift this week, and had things last week that I couldn't come in the studio, but I should be back next Tuesday in studio, and then the week after I'll be coming back to second shift for a week, and then after that I'll be back on my normal routine. But
what a letdown. I thought you were out on like a remote broadcast or something, like, you know, coming live from the from Rock the South or I don't know.
Yeah, the dumping place of Coleman currently.
Remote from Lucy.
If you're a country singer and you can tear up the field, just come on to Rock the South. We'll have a good time with you.
Daryl,
I'm sorry, and also go next door. What was it, Rite Aid or CVS, where they trashed the store?
Yes, and remember Lowe's this past week, the young lady saying there was like 1,000 people in there?
Y'all know our broadcast signal is in Coleman, right? just pointing that out.
We love Shane Quick, by the way. Dee and I do. He's a good guy.
Shane Quick, he's truly a class act guy. He's done a lot for Coleman. He gave away $100,000 to some of the local charities in Coleman, and there's nobody else in Coleman that does that. So, you know, at any event that you have, whether it's Coleman, Birmingham, Huntsville, Dallas, Chicago, it doesn't matter where you're at, you're going to have people that's going to get unruly. They're going to tear things up, and that's just nature. You know, that's how people are. And unfortunately, we had that thing to happen in Coleman with Rock the South, but Shane Quick is a great guy, and I really appreciate what he done for Coleman, and letting local folks work there, work the event to make money. You know, to give Child Haven and the Link and many other, you know, probably $10,000 to $20,000 a piece. It's just amazing the work that he's done. So I can make fun of a bit, but I really do appreciate what he's done.
Yeah, I saw y'all giving away some tickets too, Big D, and somebody that I know, he's one of my broadband customers down almost in Blount County, but Mikey Cates, that family has been through hell in the last couple of years. They're not alone, obviously, in that, but I think he won some of y'all's tickets he gave away, and much appreciated. I hope he had a good time.
Oh, yeah. Mikey's a great guy. He's been following the Big D Radio Show from the very beginning, and been on the What's Happening in Coleman Facebook page for a long time. You know, and I just felt Mikey was very deserving. His family has been through so much, and he's just a good quality man, and you know, such a good asset for the community of Coleman. And so I felt he was the right fit to receive some pre-Rock the South tickets. And actually, when he got in there, he was able to go to the VIP. So that's good.
Awesome.
So that's a free ticket.
And I got to get my picture made with him and his Harley. So that
was... Hey, look, his Harley is nice.
His
so
Harley
maybe
is
we
nice.
Can talk Melvin into trading the Jeep Wrangler for the Harley.
Yeah.
It is nice. Very nice.
So, look, Melvin, all I wanted to say is I miss you, dude. It's been several weeks, and I can't wait to get back in studio with you.
Yeah, we're going to have fun. If you're going to be back next week, we'll think of something fun. We'll have to make it a fun. We can be serious tonight. We'll be fun next week.
Well, make sure Danielle brings candy.
We got it. We got the butterscotch candy here tonight.
I want something better than old crunchy candy.
Aww.
But look, I'll let you get back to the show. I just want to say, hey, I miss all of y'all. And I will see you next Tuesday.
All right. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Melvin, we're going to tackle this wheel here.
All right.
We're good. So, does everyone need a wheel? And why?
Yes, I would say 99% of the people do. Now, of course, if you have no assets to give someone, then you don't. You know what I'm saying? You don't do it. And there are some people that unfortunately fits that mold. So there are some people that doesn't need one. But overall, yes, a wheel, because it's inexpensive. I think you can even go buy a wheel kit, you know, at Office Max and fill out one. And some technical stuff you got to make sure you do right when you do that. You can go to an attorney. Most attorneys probably don't even charge $100, $150, $200, $250 to do it. Just a simple draft of a will, you know, and you can the good thing about making a will, you control what happens to your personal belongings after you die. You point who you want over it and how you want your stuff to be dispersed. So, and then it it cuts down on a lot of the fighting and the guessing and everybody saying, hey, they wanted me to get this, they wanted me to have that. You can kind of cut out a lot of stuff. It's all cut and dry. It's real simple. So the answer would be yes. Everybody mm-hmm. needs one.
So what happens to the wheel once it's drawn up?
Well, the original copy goes with the client. Now, every once in a while, I do have some that they don't want me to give it to them. They want me to hold it, and I was like, I don't really like it, but I will hold it for them. But I tell them, I said, look, it is very important that whoever you name is your executor in that will, that that you know where it is, because they have to. When a person dies and you file a probated will, they've got to have the original will.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell them, I say, look, you know, you got to make sure someone knows it. And I really try to tell them, look, here's your will. Go find your safe place to put it. Put it in a safe box or
safety
deposit box. Do something like that. if you want to give it to the executor, you can give it to the executor. You know, whoever's going to be handling the will, just make sure that nothing has to it, because you can't come to court and say, this person had a will and this is what it says. You have to produce the document.
But what if your executor passes away?
Yeah. What I ask people, if they come in and say they want to do a will, I say, all right, who do you want to be the executor of your will? Who do you want to carry out this will when you die, to carry out the terms, to file it in probate court, and to do what it says? So they'll usually give me a name, and then I will ask them, do you want to name a secondary person? Because a lot of times that happens. And for instance, a lot of times a husband and a wife comes in. Both of them wants a will. Each one of them's got a will. That's, you know, some of them think they come in here and you do all this stuff for both of them in one document. You can't. Each one's got their own will, and each one will usually name the other one as their executor. So when you have that situation, one of them's going to die before the other one, more than likely, you know, unless an unfortunate event happens where both of them die at the same time. But I'll say this, just think of a secondary person. It can be anybody you want to. It can be your attorney. It can be any attorney you want to. It can be a friend, a neighbor. Most of the time it's their child, their parents, their sister, brother, or someone like that. So, we'll automatically name a secondary one in there so that in the event the primary executor, something happens to him or her, then your will can be done by the secondary person.
Do attorneys do a additional fee for you to hold the document?
I don't do it, and I've only done it for a few of them, and normally, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, usually it's just the people. There are some people, and I've done a few of them like this, that it's literally this person. They don't really have any kids, or if they do, they live in another state. They don't have a spouse, and this person's 60, 70 years old or whatever else. They don't have anybody around here that they don't want. They want to do it, and they'll say, look, I want you to be the executor in it. You know what I'm saying? So they'll name me as the executor in it. But that's been, I mean, in 15 years, I've probably done five of them like that, you know. But and like I said, it's because they don't have anybody else in here to do it for them. So I'll keep it, you know. But man, it's crazy. I don't ever, you know, these people walk out of my office, I don't see them. You know what I'm saying? I don't know who they are, and I tell them, I say, look, I don't know who you are. I don't know nothing about you. If something happens to you, you got to make sure that your family knows that I drew this will up for you, where I'm at, and then if something happens to you, they notify me, and then, you know, I can file what we need to get the stuff done.
So just say I have a will and I want to change it. Do you charge an additional fee to change that will? Do you have to completely rewrite the will, and do you do a secondary charge for that?
Yes. Typically, I do. I just redo the whole will. And, I usually charge them. It depends. If it, you know, the most expensive part of it's the paper, the technical paper, you know, the paper stuff that you get it on. But there's really not that much more expenses unless you really, you know, they just do a total different deal. Then yeah, I'm going to charge them the additional, you know. But like I said, it's $100-$150. You know, it's not that much money. It depends how much work we have to do on it. You can do something that's called a codicil, which is like an amendment to a will. So you got your original will, you got this codicil, and it's like an attachment to it that this be the changes. But it's just, to me, that's just too iffy. It's too, okay, you got a person, James Smith, here that leaves, that says Troy Smith's the executor and Troy Smith gets everything. All right, then he comes back and changes it. I don't want it to be Troy, I want it to be Julie Smith. Well, if James Smith dies and Troy Smith finds his codicil and then accidentally on purposely leaves it out, you know what I'm saying? Then he takes that deal with Julie out. That's why I don't like having the attachments in there. I just say, look, it's better off, let's just start over from the beginning. I can take your old will, and you know, if I prepared it for you before, whoever you want to change, executors, whoever you want to change as beneficiaries, of course you can do it, and let's do it. Now, the thing about it is, and I know we've talked about contests and stuff. We'll talk about contesting in a few minutes. Wills, you know, anybody can change the wills, and then they do. People get mad. Something happens, mm-hmm. Family disputes, whatever else, they get mad, and then they want to change stuff, and then they'll get calmed down and come back and want to change it back. But you know, you kind of make sure the person knows what they're doing mentally, make sure they're not, you know, being forced to do it or whatever else. So I kind of, you know, as long as I feel comfortable with this person knows what they want, this is what they want to do, then you know, we'll just make the changes.
Let me jump to there just a second, because I have a question I want to ask you just off the record, off the page. So do you determine sound mind? So if you have a child or a dispute in the will, and I know I didn't want to go, you didn't want to go here quite yet, but so as the attorney, do you decipher whether they are of sound mind when they make the will?
Yes and no. I've only been involved in one case where there's a contest and it was a will, and I happened to be the executor in it, because these two people had absolutely no family here, none. The closest family member, I think, was maybe in Virginia, one in California, and they was leaving stuff to non-family members. So the whole issue of sound mind, do they know what they're doing and everything else, became an issue. Now, what was brought, when we actually had a trial in court, there were documents, there were depositions of the doctors that had treated this person and stuff like that. That becomes an issue. But when you do a will, now it is notarized. Everybody probably gets notarized. So the person signs the will in front of the two witnesses. The two witnesses sign saying that person signed the will. They don't testify. They're not affirming what's in the will. All they're doing is saying, look, so-and-so wrote the will. I seen his signature. I seen him sign the will. So they're signing that he signed the will. Then you get it notarized. And in that notary statement, that person notarized is saying, in my opinion, you know, this guy signed his will. He knowingly signed his will. He's not under duress. There's nothing indicates he's under duress. He appears to be of sound mind. He appears to be know what he's signing. These witnesses sign it, and you're notarizing the signatures. Now, that doesn't make it official, non-contestable, whatever else. You can still contest it, but it doesn't give some weight on it. But, you know, if someone comes in and I feel like there's something fishy going on, or if I question, does this person really know what they're doing? I'm not going to do a will for them, you know, because I will explain to them the situation. Sound mind is a requirement to make a will, and that if anybody has questions, I tell them, I say, look, you fit to spend money on telling how you want your assets dispersed and put out, and you know, so-and-so may not get it, may not like it, and they're going to contest it. You need to make sure that they don't have nothing to be able to come back on. And I say, look, can you get something from your doctor? You know what I'm saying? Saying you at this day that he's observed you and everything seems to be fine. You understand what you're going. You don't have no diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that. But I'm trying to remember. I don't know if I've ever had anybody come in and that I have discouraged. There's been some people I've questioned a little bit about, but usually, man, I can talk to them They tell me what they want. They know who they are. They know who their children or spouse is. They know what they own. They know how they want it to be dispersed. And that's what the law requires. If they know all that stuff, they can answer all that stuff. I'll draw them up the will.
Can you explain to the audience about a notary, the purpose of the notary, and when you have something notarized, you have to present your ID to prove who
yes.
you are?
In the will aspect, okay, a notary is someone that goes to the probate judge. You have to get a bond. It used to be $10,000. I actually think it's a $25,000 bond. But it doesn't cost you $100, $120 bucks or $75. It's not a lot of money. It is some money. You go to an insurance company, get a bond as a notary, and then you go to a probate judge. You fill out this, I don't say it's an application, but you fill out this paperwork for it. You give them the bond, and then you swear or affirm that you're going to fulfill the duties of your office. And the duties of your office is when someone signs a document that you know that is the person that's supposed to sign the document. So what happens is, yes, if there's a document brought in and you're getting it notarized, a notary, if they know you personally, they can say, well, this person appeared before me. I personally know who they are. And they sign this document.
See?
If you don't know the person, then yeah, you got to have some type of a picture valid ID that you can identify that person with. It is probably a good, I don't know that it's a requirement now, but it's probably a good practice to make a copy of that document, that ID, and then attach it to the document for your records that you have, and then you notarize and sign it. Now, in a will, the notary is important in a will. It's called a self-proving will, which means as long as you got the notary and everything else, that it is a will that satisfies all the... You can take that will, file it with a petition probate will, and file it in court, and then you're fine. If it is not notarized, like a will that's probably done in the 70s or 80s, a lot of them were not notarized, you have to get the two witnesses, find the two witnesses, get them to sign an affidavit themselves in front of a notary now. So these people would come in, you'd fill out something saying, look, I remember this person made a will on this date. I personally witnessed them doing this will. This is my signature. I sign as a witness on this. And you would have to file that affidavit. It's a non-self-proving will. You'd have to file that affidavit along with the will when you file a petition to probate.
Thank you for that information.
Yeah, so I mean, notaries. Oh yeah, notaries are important. And you know, we use. I'm a notary. I went and did the stuff I need to be a notary, and then always keep someone in my office as a notary, because any type of if you file a petition like in court, any type of petitions, you have to have stuff notarized. I mean, we always do an affidavits. When you're doing a lawsuit or doing things, discovery comes in, there's questions and stuff that are written questions that are written to one of the parties, and you have to, and that party has to answer it, or that person has to swear that these answers are true, so you have a notary to sign off on it. So, yeah, notaries are very important, though.
Even when you run a radio station, I've learned this the hard way. We ran advertising for the new Polaris about 2 months ago. To get paid on that, they wanted me to print out all of the times that we ran that ad and get it signed and notarized.
Notarized, yes, yes.
Yep.
And you can get something notarized, like at the bank, they have Notary Public.
Yeah, banks have the notary. That's what a lot of people, if you don't go to almost every attorney's office is going to have one. And I don't charge any fees. I don't know if any other ones charge any fees. And there may be a fee, it's said. I don't know. There used to be something about $5 or $10, but I don't think so.
I think the banks are free here.
Yeah, the banks are free. There are people that's probably notaries that doesn't work at a business that are out there. They may charge a little bit.
That are individuals, yes, that just do it on their own.
All I got to say about that is y'all enjoy and appreciate living in a small community, because it ain't that way in the big cities.
I agree.
Everybody wants to charge for everything.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to go to commercial break, and we will be back with our local attorney, Melvin Hastings, with Understanding the Law.
Attention, Coleman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95.
Yeah, so we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill. Hey, we're not kidding. Seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95kullman.com today. Or visit our website, live95kullman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Kullman's independent radio. It's summertime. Today's forecast, sunny and warm. High temperatures in the afternoon in the low to mid-90s, which will feel like your insides are boiling. With a chance of shower in the afternoon, which will not cool the temperature down at all. It will only make it more steamy. Chance of lightning with the storm. Nothing major. Just enough to knock the power out for 3 hours while you suffer without air conditioning. This will be your forecast through the end of September, when it will be replaced with a chance of thunderstorms that could turn into a tornado. Ah, life in northern Alabama. Kullman. Well, now back to the music on Live 95. Kullman's independent.
Here's a new Live 95 suggestion on how to prepare for the new work week. On Sunday night, you cook dinner. You help the kids finish their homework. You scream at your husband. You take the trash out. You make sure your kids brush their teeth. You tuck them in, sigh loudly, then pick up your remote control and turn on Sunday Night Live on Live 95. It's like being at a music festival, but without the illegal vapors, bright lights, and rednecks around you. However, if you want to make it more authentic, you can pour beer all over yourself. Sunday Night Live, all live tracks, from 9 o'clock until midnight, right here on Kullman's independent radio station, Live 95. You're listening to Live 95. Welcome back. Live 95 is Kullman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Kullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Kullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
No, I'm Little D. Big D. But I have to ask you this question. Where did you get your hat from? It says, Make America Great Again. Where'd you get it from?
From one of the Trump rallies I went to.
I love it. Gerald needs one of them.
That would have been August or September when I was getting big in his campaign. I actually went to Orlando for a week right before the election, man.
Did you?
Yes. Me and my wife just... I don't tell how many hundreds of phone calls we made and talked to people and route. We had fun. It was fun going.
Were you as shocked as the rest of America was when he pulled out ahead?
Yes, because everybody said he was going to lose, man. I mean, I was about to get sick. I thought, man, all that work we've done, I still felt like he's going to be all right. But, Hillary Clinton's going to be the next president, period. There's just no way around it. Then I started seeing all these...
I had my bottle of Valium ready to go, and then...
all these states started falling into place that he shouldn't have won. I thought, oh, my God, he's going to carry this big. And
very nice.
We have to remember that the Lord's in control.
Yeah, he definitely looked at that one, you know. I don't know.
Should have put a whole bunch of pollsters out of business, but I don't think that actually happened.
Probably didn't.
Should have done a lot of things.
So, getting back to our topic, so can you tell the audience who can be an executor of a will? Is there like a criteria that they have to meet?
I am trying to think if there's an age. We get caught off guard. I believe to make a will, I think you can be at least 18 years old. And I may be wrong. Maybe some lawyer could say, he don't even know what he's talking about. It may be 19. It's either 18 or 19. That is to make a will. I would think that probably at least 19 to be an executor. And it may be 19 to make a will, because the whole deal between 18 and 19, which is crazy, I don't know why the legislature won't fix that, make it one age. To enter into a valid contract, you have to be 19 years of age. And can't be 18, you have to be 19. anything made before then is voidable. So, you know, signing a will, doing that stuff, it may require you to be 19. And I would bet to be an executor, you'd probably have to be 19 to make a will. So as long as you're 19 and above, that's it. It does not have to be a spouse. It does not have to be a kinfolk. It can be anybody. It can be your preacher. I mean, I'm trying to think the craziest one. I don't know what the craziest one would be, but I know I've had neighbors and friends name as executors that people's requested. Maybe want to come to me. I have to try to think of the craziest executor that I've had named. But usually it's the other spouse or kid or something.
Right. So what's the difference between an executor and an administrator?
An executor is in a will. So if you draw up a will, you're called the executor. You're still an administrator of the estate, but the real legal term is a personal representative. All right. The personal representative of an estate in a will is called an executor. The personal representative in an estate of someone that died without a will is called an administrator. So if you die with the will, it means you die testate, T-E-S-T-A-T-E. If you die without a will, it's intestate. So if you die with the will, you file a petition for letters testamentary, and that says, hey, judge, here's his last will and testament. We want this will to be verified by the court and carried out. If you die without a will, you file a petition for letters of administration. You want an administrator to be named in it.
So if I come to you and you draw up a will for me, when does it become effective? Immediately when you draw it up, or does it have to go through a process?
Just when they die. A will is a document. It's a very important document, but it has absolutely no effect on anybody until that person dies. Because that's why you can change it. You can change a will. Now, it's a little bit different than a trust. If you draw up like a trust account or a trust document, some of them are irrevocable, which means you can't change them. A will is always revocable. You can always take a will and if I got a will here and I don't want something happens and I don't want it to be valid or whatever else, I don't want it to be carried out, you just simply tear it up. I say you destroy your will. You don't have to file anything saying you just destroy it and go on, because remember, to probate a will, you have to have the original copy. So if you take that original copy, tear it up, it's done. That's saying I don't want this will no more.
Y'all may have covered this because I actually haven't heard the whole show tonight, but I wanted to ask. So what if there's a disputed, you know, there's another mysterious copy out there and somebody's saying that it's more current than the one that you've got that you're trying to probate? How do you prove? How do you disprove? What does that other document carry any weight?
Yes, it does. You still have to produce the original of it, and you would produce the later, because the will always says this: I hereby do this, and it says I revoke all prior wills and codicils, you know, priorly made. I can't remember exactly how the first paragraph says, but something like that. So if I have a will from January 2017 and then someone comes and then I just did one in May of 2017, the one in May revokes the January one. Even if I don't tear it up, it's still revoked out. So if you file one in probate, file the January one in probate, and somebody comes up and says, oh, here's one they did in May, it becomes an issue. So both of them would go into the court, and you're going to be calling witnesses in, and it's going to be a big fight. You know, if there's different beneficiaries named and stuff, everybody that's beneficiaries in each will, the executors in each will, people that are not beneficiaries. If you, for instance, if I have a will and I leave everything to Jay Fuller, okay,
well then,
yeah, I know it. Yeah, you ain't gonna get much.
You need a notary. Let me find you a notary, man.
So if I leave everything to Jay Fuller, well, in my will, Jay Fuller's entitled to hearing on it because he's the beneficiary. But anybody that would have taken under my, if I had died without a will, would still would have to get notice and an opportunity to come contest it. So that would mean my spouse, that would mean my kids. Anybody that could take, if I didn't have a will, has to receive notice also. And that stuff comes up. I mean, you know, all of a sudden there's a will in there and people's left out you start thinking, they start thinking things are fishy or whatever else. But I tell them, I said, look,
you go through a tree, we draw it. All right, here's the person that's died, who's his spouse, who's his parents, who's his kids, who's his brothers and sisters, you know, and we decide who has to get notice. So people that could receive under the will gets notice. People that are creditors, I mean, if this person owes a mortgage or owes this or owes that, if you know it, you have to give them knowledge of it, that you file in a will so that they can file a claim, or I think they can even file a contest if they want to. But most of the time, it's the...
How is it authenticated? And does that require the notary? Or, you know, I'm going
to... Yeah, yeah,
well, I want to jump in there because question is, are wills identified only by their name, or does it involve the individual's also their identification, which is our Social Security number?
No, it's always by the name.
So there's no Social Security number involved?
No, we don't put any numbers, no addresses. Usually, like in the wills that I do, and it's probably a standard thing that everybody does, in my will to say, hey, this person comes in, and then there'll be a paragraph that says this person's married or widowed or single, whatever else, to say this person has children, would name their children, or they don't have children. So we'll put some identifying information in there so that you know that John A. Smith is the right John A. Smith comes in and talks to you. It's not some other John A. Smith.
Yeah, because that's why I was thinking maybe a Social Security number would be involved, because so many people have duplicate names that are the same.
Yeah. Well, the whole deal with Social Security numbers, here within the last month or two, our Alifile system, where the electronic filing system with the courts, I mean, they have undergone a massive deal about redacting information, take off all that personal information, because you could...
It's all these Trump leaks.
Oh, yeah.
it's the Russians.
Yeah, I know, because, you know...
Danielle, I'm not supposed to take over your show.
No, it's fine, because, you know, I really want to know, beside the notary presenting your driver's license, and the names being the same, that would be a logical question. How would you know?
Usually you're going to hopefully find out that, hey, this why does this person that's executing this will, you know, how do they have access to the will and stuff? Usually you can deduct that information, but a lot of personal identifying information is getting out of court systems because people, they're hacking it, and you can get on out of court, man. There's old cases you can probably get on there now, and you can find out everything you want about a person, their date of birth, their Social Security, their addresses, where they worked at. You can find out all kinds of information. So there's a lot, I guess there was a lot of ID theft and stuff like that.
Okay, so I'm going to skip around, and I'm going to ask you, do you have to be a current resident in that county? Because I'm fixing to ask you the question about, you know, the will being probated. So when the will is probated, it has to be in the county that you live in. And also, what if you're not an American citizen? Does that matter if you're an American citizen or not? I know I stumped you.
You stumped me on that one. But let's go back to the county. Answer's yes 99% of the time. But every once in a while, you know, maybe this person lived in Coleman County, and they was put in a nursing home in Blount County, and they've been in a nursing home in Blount County for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever else, and they pass away. You still file it in the county where they have assets at. They died in Blount County, but you know, in your petition, you'd allege, hey, they lived in Blount County, nursing home, whatever else, but they're still a resident of Coleman County. They have assets and stuff in Coleman County. So that's typically where you would file it in the county where they have assets, because otherwise, if you filed it in Blount County where that person died at, then you're going to have Blount County courts trying to dictate what happens to property that's actually located in Coleman. They can do it, but it gets to be a little more issue. And if you filed it in Blount County and you allege all this property is located in Coleman, that Blount County probate judge is going to transfer it to Coleman anyway. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, look, you can have it. It's your new county. You can deal with it. It's not my problem. So the
case that keeps coming up in my mind is the whole Casey Kasem thing. I mean, with the radio, and then, of course, he sort of went and hooked up with another person, and then the family, like, you know, was denied access to everything. That was more medical care, but sorry to derail again.
No, yes. And
made here, national headlines.
it did. Yeah, it's true.
It did. And here's the deal, like, and there is a uniform probate code, which means that the laws, pretty well the laws of probate are uniform throughout all the states. And I think pretty well most of the states have adopted it. So like the laws in Alabama, it's pretty well the laws in Florida and Georgia and Washington and Nebraska and everything else. I think they're all kind of essentially the same. And
And in Alabama, you can disinherit anybody you want to except for your spouse. Now then, you can still disinherit your spouse, but your spouse is entitled to an elective share. So what that means is, if I did a will and I left everything to someone else, that spouse gets, once I die, that spouse gets notice that there's been a will probated. That spouse gets to see the will and says, all right, I'm not named in it. That spouse has to file a petition for their elective share. They have to say, oh, wait a minute, I'm not named in that will, but I was married to this person whenever they died, and by law, I'm entitled to, it's one-third, or I think it's the first 100,000, and I think it is whichever is greater. I can't remember if it's whichever is greater or smaller. So they're entitled to at least a one-third share or $100,000 of the asset. So you can't disinherit your spouse, even though you can leave them out of the will. The spouse still gets a share, but this is what's important. The spouse has to file for their share. They don't automatically get it. They have to file for it.
Let's assume that that's what happened in the Casey Kasem deal. Maybe he just unintentionally left out his first wife. I don't know.
Yeah, that or left out the kids and stuff. And,
right.
Man, that's a hard thing to prove. We're getting a will contest. I mean, the kids has a tough burden to overcome, because they're going to have to prove this. They're going to have to say, look, he did a will, and he either didn't. He was not a sound mind when he did it. He had dementia. He's under the influence of drugs, or he's under heavy medication, or he had some kind of mental disease that kept him from understanding what he's doing. Or they have to say that he was under distress or influence. His new spouse went and forced him to do this. That's easy to say. It's harder to prove. So that's what they'd have to do. And essentially what they're trying to do is say, look, at the time he made that will, he did not know what he's doing. Throw that will completely out. And most courts are reluctant to do that. You have to have a strong case to prove that. So the kids probably get left out. But I'm going to tell y'all, because we talk about what's the real world stuff. That's the law.
That could turn this into a two-hour show.
Yeah. The real world stuff is this, what happens in will contests. And it depends how much money and how much assets are out there. You know, if you I say that, but heck, I see people fighting over $5,000 worth of stuff. You know, and you think, man, I can't believe you spend this kind of money fighting over $5,000 worth of stuff.
Can they start liquidating the estate to fight over?
Yes, at some point. I mean, at the probate court, that might be the best thing for a probate judge to do is say, look, I'm just going to sell everything, and then we'll divvy up the money. And then most people, because they got sentimental value, and then people usually start behaving a little bit better. But in real life, usually what happens when they start filing will contests, they know it's hard to prove. But what you're doing is getting something filed in the court so that you have a say-so, and you're kind of forcing the other party to say, all right, look, I'm not going to spend all this money. We're not going to fight. We're not going to do this. What can I give you just to make you go away? And that's what happens in real life when they're doing contests.
Well, I want to give you an example. Just say we don't have a spouse, and we have three children, and one of the children are left in the will. What happens to these other two children? Are they just written out, or do they have the ability and the authority to contest that will? Because there's two more than one.
Yeah. They have the, I mean, anybody, remember, who can contest a will? The people that can contest a will are the people that would receive property if that person died outside of the will, or someone named in that will. So any kids or any spouse can contest a will no matter what. So the answer to your question is yes, the other two can contest it, but if mom or dad left everything to one child, them two can contest it all day long, but they're still stuck with, they have to either prove the person didn't know what they was doing when they did the will, or they was forced to do it and under duress to do it. So it's
I have my mic off. Do they have to pay for it, or can they liquidate the estate to pay for it?
They'll have to hire somebody to do it. But here's the good thing about it: at least the legislature got this right. If you file a will contest and fail, the law states you have to pay the court costs and pay all the costs. Yeah, that usually stops everybody when they start realizing they have to pay for all the costs.
Wow.
Well, we're going to go to commercial break. We'll be back with Understanding the Law with Melvin Hastings. This is Little D.
Heated show.
Yeah. Danielle Carnes. We'll see you in just a few.
Here's a new Live 95 suggestion on how to prepare for the new work week. On Sunday night, you cook dinner. You help the kids finish their homework. You scream at your husband. You take the trash out. You make sure your kids brush their teeth. You tuck them in, sigh loudly, then pick up your remote control and turn on Sunday Night Live on Live 95. It's like being at a music festival, but without the illegal vapors, bright lights, and rednecks around you. However, if you want to make it more authentic, you can pour beer all over yourself. Sunday Night Live, all live tracks from 9 o'clock until midnight, right here on Cullman's independent radio station, Live 95. Welcome back. Live 95 is Cullman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
That just kills me every time. I'm so, okay, wait for it to be fixed. So I know this is a lengthy subject that we're talking about tonight. The discussion is wide open. But I want you to make it very clear on how, what the procedure to probate the will, in the time frame it takes to probate the will.
All right. The law states whether you file to probate a will or whether you file to administer estate because the person died without a will. The law requires the person be dead at have died at least 5 days prior. So you can't do it prior to the fifth day. You have to wait to the fifth day. And
where did that come from?
That's in the statute. It's in the statute. Okay, I tell you where it probably comes from. Well, I'm going to go back 15, 20 years for law school stuff. There's something called the Simultaneous Death Act, and it's the craziest thing. I don't understand it. But it says that if your spouse dies within 5 days of your death, it is treated as a simultaneous death.
Hmm.
Okay, it's crazy. I don't know why it matters. It does. It has some play. I could never understand it. I read it once in a while. I just throw the law book away because it's crazy. But you have a car accident. One person dies at the car accident. The other person goes to the UAB. They survive for 3 or 4 days. If they die before the fifth day, then they are treated as if they die simultaneously. Mm. Now, then what does that mean in the will? Who knows? I mean, I can't figure out why that is important, but it is. I guess it is important is if the surviving spouse would be the executor of the dying spouse is the first to die, will, then you would be treated as, you wouldn't be treated as a surviving executor. You'd be treated as if someone that died simultaneously, so you'd go to the secondary executor. I guess that would be an example why it matters. I don't know. But anyway, regardless, I guess that's why they had the 5 day rule in there, but you gotta wait 5 days. So what would happen is somebody comes to me and says, hey, look, my mom died, I've got the will, and I need to see what we need to do about it. So if they've got the will, we'll look, see if they got original. All right, if they don't have the original, you know, I say, man, you've got to get the original. So that person's got to make every effort they can to find the original will. If they can't, you can file a copy of it. But the statute requires original, and then there's a whole procedure going through that thing. Everybody can contest it. It can kind of get to be a big deal. But usually, most of the time, I don't know if I've ever had to file a copy. I may have. If I have, it's only been once or twice. But and everybody agreed it was the will, and we went on. There was no problem with it. But you file there. They'll bring you the original will.
you file this thing. It's called a petition to probate a will. You say this is executor in there. You would list all the people. You have to get their addresses, their ages, and then just take it over and file, pay the filing fee. It's $79, $8,900. I can't remember what the filing fee is. It's a little bit of a filing fee, and then there's a part of the fee. There's like $30 or $40 filing fee probably, and then there's $30 or $40 that's used to run in the papers.
So are they looking at 14 days? 60 days.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, okay, here's another very important thing. A will, not only can you have to wait 5 days after the person dies before you file it, it has to be filed within 5 years of their death. If you wait after 5 years of their death, then it's treated as if they don't have a will. Mm-hmm. So, see, and I've had a person recently, like I think this year, come in and say, hey, you know, I got this will, and they ain't give me this property. I'm supposed to get this property and everything. And I said, well, how long did that person die? And they said, well, we've been dead about 10 years. I was like, wait a minute. Now, whoa. I said, you saying you got the will? And they said, yeah, I got the will. And I said, I'm not even supposed to get it. And I had to break the news to that person. I was like, look, unfortunately, that will is not effective now. You had to file that will within 5 years, or otherwise they're treated like they didn't have a will.
So that is called statute of limitation.
Yes, correct? That's the statute of limitations in there. So after that 5 years, that person's treated as if they didn't have a will. So this person was like a cousin or someone like that of that one that died. He didn't get the property. The kids got the property because they was in line to get it as he died without a will. So yeah, that person left my office real sick.
Why would you do that, Melvin? Why would you not present the will if you had the will?
Because people didn't know that. They think, hey, I've got this will, and they think if I'm named in the will that I automatically get the stuff, you know. But yeah, he just made a bad mistake.
Example of why we created Understanding the Law.
yeah. You got 5 years to file it. So you file it in the probate court, that's the procedure. Otherwise, okay, then what I do is we list all the heirs, who would be potential heirs, who are heirs in this will, you know, and then who would be heirs if it died without a will. You go to all those people and try to get them to sign a waiver. It says, hey, I agree that's the will. I waive notice of it. I waive a hearing. There's no hearing on it. Judge, go ahead and probate it. So you try to get everyone that's involved in it to sign a waiver. If you got 10 people that's involved in it and all nine of them sign a waiver and one of them says, no, I'm not signing a waiver, then it's set for hearing. So the will's held out there. There's no executor name. The judge will set it for hearing. It'll run in the paper that there's a hearing date set on this date, and then you go to court, and then that person, and I've had a few of these hearings, that person can appear and say, Judge, no, I don't agree with this, blah, blah, you know, and why. You know, they get to tell why, but if they don't file the contest, if they don't file a contest in the will, the judge is going to name the person that's named in the will as the executor.
And in your experience, does that go pretty swiftly? I mean, from the time that the will is probated to, you know, to where the paperwork's filed, to where it's probated, is it pretty swift in Coleman County?
It can be. A lot of it is, it's up and down. I mean, how many they get. It could be as little as a month. It could be 3 or 4 months out.
Because
they're loaded up with cases. I mean, the probate court does a lot of stuff. They do adoptions, conservatorships, guardianships. They do commitments. Then they try to do these will stuff. So the probate judge is loaded up. So, you know, they set hearings ever so often. And, you know, if there's not a lot of stuff going on there, they'll sneak a hearing date in there. If they're not, then sometimes you have to wait. So,
and the docket roll. Because they only have certain times that things come and be on docket. So in Coleman County, I know it's that way. And you can clarify that.
That's right. They'll go out there and set cases as fast as they can. But, you know, there's a lot to it. You got to make sure everybody gets noticed. You got to make sure it runs in the paper for so long. Make sure, you know, that anybody that has that can contest it can have an ability to come here and contest it. But like I said, that's rare. People do contest wills. There's no doubt about it. But most of the time, someone don't want to sign it because they're mad about something. And a lot of times we show up for court and that person don't even show up to contest it. So, and even if they do show up, the judge say, look, here's a will. And unless you got something to prove that it's not the will, then I'm going to sign it and I'm going to appoint this person executor.
So how much does the executor make? Like, do they get paid, or is there like a flat fee?
I believe there at one time they it was set out in the law, and it was 2.5% of what goes in and 2.5% of what goes out of the estate, which essentially is 5%. So if your estate was worth $100,000, then an executor could get paid or would get paid 5% of the fee for doing all the work.
5%.
Would be $5,000. Okay. That's all essentially how it is. Now, I believe that the law has been changed. It says a reasonable fee that kind of gives it up to the discretion of the court. But since everybody's done the 5% for so long, that's kind of what everybody does, unless it's really, really, really complicated. And then, you know, if you have to hire an attorney to do the stuff too, then, you know, there's that fee taken out. And usually, again, it's the standard 5% of it too. You know, usually if you handle something like it, it's 5%.
So what's the difference between a power of attorney and a will? They're two different things.
They're two different things. A power of attorney is something that you designate that you want done, or you give someone the ability to transact your business, but that is only while you're alive. Once a person dies, the power of attorney dies with them. So any authority that person had to sign stuff goes when that person dies. And then a will, remember, it's just a piece of paper. It does not become effective or have any effect until you die. So they're kind of the same thing, you know, because you're transacting a person's business, you know, as in a will if they're dead, or if they're a power of attorney if they're alive. But, you know, one stops at death and one starts at death. So because I have people come in here and say, you know, they say, hey, this person died. I've been their name, their power of attorney or whatever. And I said, okay, you understand that your power of attorney died with them. So unless you're named in the will, then you can't do nothing. They say, well, they, you know, I had the power of attorney and they got their son named as the executor in the will. And I said, well, your son takes over now.
Right. And I think that is confusing for people.
It is confusing, you know, and it's the same thing as guardianships and conservatorships. If that person, while they're alive, if they have assets that needs to be protected, and maybe they're in the nursing home, maybe this person has some kind of mental disease or whatever else, and the probate court appoints a person, a conservator and guardian over them, all of that goes along until that person dies. When that person dies, that guardianship dies, conservatorship dies, you're supposed to file an accounting with the court saying, all right, judge, here's all the money that I've handled for that person, here's what I've done with it, here's what's left. And then it's over with. Your job's over with. You're done. You get paid a fee if the judge gives you a fee out of it for your services. And then that money and those assets become part of come under the executor's control once the will is filed in there. And then, hey, there's another thing that comes up. Sometimes, okay, let's say we got three kids out here, and child number one's got the will. But child number two's named the executor in there. So mom and dad, or dad dies, mom's already passed away. So child number one says, no, I'm not going, you know, he's got the will in his possession, the original, which the court needs. And child number two says, you know, it's named in there, but he don't have it. So what you do is you file a petition for letters of administration, and that's another term we add to it. I can't remember what it's called, but with the will annexed or whatever else, but you file letters of administration, it gets served on the other children, and they're presented with the opportunity within like 5 days to file the will. You know, they have to come to court and file the will, and then if they don't, then the judge treats it like an administration. So you can, I have people comes in and says, hey, look, we have this person has a will that is not going to file it, they're not going to do anything. And I say, well, look, the only thing you can do is file to be appointed administrator, and then that other person has an opportunity to bring the will up there and file it and see what happens, you know, and the court can summons them to come to court and ask them about a will. So
I'm waving the white flag. I give up.
You give up. That's a lot to it, man.
Melvin, we appreciate you much. This is a fabulous show that you do, the information that you give out for people. It's very informative. I miss D. I know you do.
You're doing just fine, little D.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. This week on the Big D Show, we're going to have Christopher Greer. I'm excited. I'm filling in for D on Thursday. I look forward to everyone being here, and come back and visit with us Understanding the Law next Tuesday with local attorney Melvin Hastings and Big D Daryl Nethery here at Live 95.5, Coleman's Independent Radio.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile?